Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Visit us on the web at tailwind-coaching.com or like us on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching. And now, your host, Coach Rob.
Welcome everyone again to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Coach Rob, and we've got a good show for you today. We're going to discuss the Giro d'Icello. In fact, my first stage race. And a stage race in northern New Jersey, three stages over 2 days. And we're going to go through each stage, and I'm going to give you some coaching tips and some advice on what went well, what didn't go so well, and what you can gain from my experiences. But first, I'd like to go over a little bit of quick housekeeping, and that will be very simple. For those of you who are looking for coaching consults or for coaching for the summer season or the cyclocross season, I am available. I have a few spots open for you. Please note that I am in the process of still changing my coaching offerings. I'm going to be reducing the number of offerings from four offerings, and I'm going to condense them into a couple, two or three probably, much more condensed offerings. Basically, we're going to have one offering at least that's going to be online only for those of you who are a distance away from me. And the other two options will be varieties of one-on-one coaching, so to speak, but with a couple of perks thrown in for the those who are looking for something a little bit more. Okay. As always, you can check me out at tailwind-coaching.com. Go on, go looking for one-on-one coaching information. And of course, you can always, if you're not interested in having a coach breathing down your neck at all times, take a look at my training plan selection, things you can download and follow on your own. In fact, there is a current coupon going on for until July 4th, actually, and that is Summer Power will get you 15% off of any of my training plans. The coupon code itself is S-Power, no spaces. S-Power on checkout gets you 15% off of any and all of my training plans, including my modular training systems. So if that's something you're looking for, or you've been interested in some kind of training plans for the summer or fall season, I recommend you take a look at that. Particularly those of you who are looking at centuries, consider the Century Plan, 12 weeks of training that will get you, not only get you through your century, but get you through it powerfully. All right. Those of you who are emailing me, you can do so at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can find more contact information on the website. And of course, I always ask, if you are listening to this on iTunes, please go ahead and rate that podcast that you're listening to. If you're listening to it on Stitcher, if you're listening to it on Blueberry, Podbean, if you're listening to it on the website, head on over to iTunes, take a few minutes, rate the information that you're getting. It's a great feedback for me, and it really gives me an incentive to continue providing you with information. All right, that being said, let's get to the main thrust of today's show, and that's going to be the Giro d'Icello. Okay, for those of you who are unaware, or those of you who may be listening to this off the website, or on iTunes or whatever, the Giro d'Icello is a a two-day, three-stage race in northern New Jersey, Sussex County, New Jersey, to be exact. And it's been going on for 9 or 10 years now, and it originally started as a women's race only. Only women's fields included. In fact, it was a race that Evelyn Stevens, probably one of the best-known American female cyclists, she raced that, and she, of course, won it a number of years ago. But as the story goes, women's racing is, while it's up and coming, and I love the fact that it is up and coming, it was just not enough to fund the permits and everything necessary to make the Cello happen. So they began adding men's fields, and to this end, they've added not only a men's 3 field, a men's 4-5 field. They've added one-day entries for the time trial, the crit, and the circuit race. They've added juniors fields, etc., etc. So the race has actually grown to be fairly large. field limits for women and men were somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 women, 75 men in the 4-5 field, 50, I believe, in the Cat 3 men, etc., etc. Also attracting a 1-2-3 women's field, which honestly, the racing was probably more interesting than the men's 3 field was, but I digress on that. The main issue here is the Cello is a really great stage race to begin with. Now, I've raced for a number of years. I've raced on the road. I've raced circuit races. I have raced mountain bikes. I've raced cyclocross. The one thing I've never done a stage race. Mainly because previously, doing any kind of stage racing meant that you were undertaking something of the magnitude of Tour of the Catskills or of the Green Mountain Stage Race. And let's put it this way, that's a major, major undertaking. Not only are you talking pretty much an entire season worth of training just to get through races of those difficulties, but you're also talking significant travel time, hotel costs, etc., etc. And also we're very much talking longer stages, and for someone who's not accustomed to stage racing or racing longer races, that can be very intimidating. So by that rule of thumb, the Cello is a very good stage race to begin with, mainly because it's close to home, at least for me here in New Jersey, and it's the stages are relatively short, so you know, you can actually go ahead and get your feet wet without being really overwhelmed. Now, interestingly enough, I had not intended to do the Cello. My big goal of the season was Tour of the Battenkill, and if you've listened to my Battenkill race report, you know exactly how that ended up. It didn't end up very well for me. But I've been toying with fitness throughout the season, and you know how my body and my legs had been feeling and everything else, and made the decision basically the day before registration closed. One of our team rides was an extremely fast, intense ride, and my wife and I had both discussed the fact that if we felt good on that team ride, we would just go ahead and register, sort of without any kind of plans as to training or anything else. But in any event, we actually went ahead and registered up for it. And Saturday morning was the appointed time, so to speak. And that's actually the starting stage of the race. And stages of the race went as follows. There was a time trial Saturday morning. And, of course, not just any time trial, but an uphill time trial. And that was followed by an afternoon criterium race. And Sunday was capping off with a circuit race, a 5.5-mile circuit race. And each stage had its own requirements, its own skills that were necessary, and its own pitfalls and hazards. And we're going to go over those very individually, starting with the time trial. Just one moment here. Saturday morning brought a long drive up to northern New Jersey for us, about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. In fact, up to Stokes State Forest for the time trial phase of the Giro di Cello. The time trial itself was a 4.75-mile uphill time trial. Now, I will be the first to tell you that I am not a good time trialist by any matter of means. In fact, that is probably my biggest weakness, is time trial and racing against the clock. Now, the interesting thing, however, your average time trialist who is very good on a flat to rolling course will also struggle with an uphill time trial. Uphill time trials are very much they're the domain of the specialist. You have to be very, very specialized to succeed well in an uphill time trial. Those who are exceedingly good on flats tend to have a poor power to weight ratio. I mean, bigger guys put out a lot of power. They do very, very well in flat time trials. Climbers tend to be very explosive. They don't have that huge sustained power, even though they have a high power to weight ratio. And finding someone who blends that together is relatively rare from my experience. So an uphill time trial is nothing to it's really no joke. It's a pretty tough discipline. But I digress with that. arriving on the scene, we were directed to overflow traffic or overflow parking because we got a late start and we only got there about 40 minutes prior to the first wave of competitors going off. That was somewhat of a problem because that sort of screwed up the warm-up phase of our day. And we registered, we rode up to the registration, we got our numbers, we pinned up numbers and everything else, and my wife was the first one off. I believe she had an 8:08 a.m. start time. So there was not much time to warm up by the time we got numbers pinned and everything else. There was maybe 10 minutes or so to warm up, which for a time trial is could be a little bit insignificant. For an effort that was expected to last between 15 and 20 minutes, a warm-up should probably be about 40 minutes or so for an effort like that, especially a hard effort like that. Now, I had a start time of about 8:45 or so I actually had a little more time. However, I really didn't have time to get back to the car, sit on the trainer as I would have liked to have, and warmed up progressively. What I ended up doing was rolling around in the area and doing about 30-35 minutes of on-road warm-up, which is something that I very rarely, if ever, do. In fact, I almost never do that, and that sort of threw me for a loop that morning that I was doing that. while it was good to really get power numbers up, the big thing about a time trial, and especially an uphill time trial, is to realize that that first effort is really, really going to hurt. And you have to prepare yourself during your warm-up for that. So I was able to do that. However, I don't believe that I either A, received enough warm-up time, or my warm-up was progressive enough. I did not really feel great during that time trial. And that's sort of reflected in my numbers, in the power numbers. So if we look at the time trial as a whole, bearing in mind that at this point in the season, without any regular riding and without the motivation to get out and train 5 days a week, I'm pushing a threshold of around 245 watts or so. And in my case, at my current weight, that puts me around 3.6 to 3.7 watts per kilogram, which is not too bad. However, it's not too great either. But anyway, if recapping power numbers, we were looking at a 306 watt average power for the duration of the time trial, which is about 18 minutes and 19 seconds. Ideally, what I would have liked to have seen was approximately a 17 minute uphill TT, and it just wasn't happening. But that 306 watt average gave me a 4.64 watt per kilogram rating, which is not too bad, but definitely not where I would like to be. The real story for a time trial, and particularly this time trial, an uphill variety, this time trial, if you look at the profile, started with maybe 500 meters of flat rolling terrain, and then suddenly kicked up. All right, the average gradient for the first half of the time trial was about 2.6% average grade, and I think the max was somewhere around 9. The average grade for the second half was only 2.4%, but a maximum of about 11, and that was right near the top. So ideally, the bottom has a higher average gradient, has some steeper sections on it, but with any time trial you're looking for, and this is important, you're looking for a negative split. You never want to start out of the gate extremely hard, do well on the first half, and fade during the second half of the time trial. Okay? I'll give you one guess what I did on this one. Exactly what I shouldn't do. Essentially, it was a positive split. What I had done was came out of the gate extremely hard, averaging 326 watts for the first half of the TT, and then dropping significantly, only averaging 284 for the second half. Now, in general, take note of this. What you want to do is you want a negative split. You want to, if you don't want a negative split, you at least want an even split. And what that means is you want to keep your power numbers and your pacing relatively constant throughout the entire effort. So in this case, it would have been better for me to average 306 watts throughout the entire TT and possibly having a little bit left over a little bit left over for the end, as opposed to going out extremely hard and fading halfway through. And that is, part of that is just an issue of not knowing the terrain you're riding on, not knowing the race course you're on, and again, not having a really, really proper warm-up. All right. So the number one thing to take away from this so far is is a negative split. In other words, pacing. Keep your pacing appropriate for the effort you're putting out. Now, the other thing that this does, and this is going to be a theme throughout the entirety of the podcast, is racing is an extremely good way to determine how well your functional threshold has been set, how well you have been tested. In this case, if I'm averaging 306 watts for 18 and a quarter minutes, it stands to reason that while yes, there's a heavy, heavy part of a heavy, heavy component of VO2 work involved in this kind of effort, looking at the normalized power, about 340 something watts will tell you that, and the intensity factor of 1.4 may tell you that perhaps that threshold needs to be retested at this point. It also tells you that racing is perhaps the best training for you as well, but more on that later. Now, other things to watch for in terms of a time trial. Time trial is very mentally taxing. There's a significant mental aspect to racing against the clock. When you are racing in a peloton or in a group ride setting, you have other riders and other wheels to key off of, and that can be a very important thing. Racing a time trial requires a very, very specific state of mind and a very specific set of mental fortitudes, and it's a an ability to tolerate extreme pain for extreme periods of time with almost nothing to show for it except for time on a clock. You know, you're not racing directly against other competitors, although you may, if you're significantly faster, pass them on the road. You are not typically keying off of other riders' wheels. You're not drafting, you're not following wheels, things like that. So the mental aspect of a time trial is extremely, extremely tough to grasp, and it requires a lot of practice to really do a time trial efficiently and to really take hold of a time trial and do very well on it in a mental aspect. All right. And again, pacing is the utmost of importance in terms of time trialing. And you have to be extremely careful with your pacing. Again, in my case, I started way too hard and I faded significantly as the time trial went on, to the effect of almost 40 watts or 10% drop in my power production. All right. So that's a pretty significant actually more than 10%, about 12 to 13% drop in power production. So that's a fairly significant drop off and something that you really don't want to see in a time trial. Okay. So finishing the TT again, 18 minutes and 19 seconds put me near the bottom third of the GC order. I really did not go into the cello expecting to win or even expecting to place in the GC. I was going in merely to experience the concept of stage racing, of racing multiple times in a day, racing multiple disciplines in a day, and really just pick up some experience and get some racing time in the legs. And of course, fly the flag for my squad, Pure Energy Cycling. So, following the time trial, rolling back down the race course, watching others kill it on the way up, the importance of recovery post time trial came to be very evident. After chatting with friends a little bit, the key things that I did and the key things to remember are that you need to spin out your legs. You've just competed in a 15 to 20 minute, or in many cases you may be competing up to an hour, constant high intensity effort. You really need to spin lightly to get those legs loosened up and get the blood moving to flush out all the junk that's in those legs. In our case, it actually played to our benefit that we had to roll back to the car. We had to ride 3/4 mile back to the parking area. And that was really beneficial because it forced us to get out, get on the bike, and move a little bit and spin some of the crap out of the legs. So that was a blessing in disguise. But it's a very important thing for you to note that you need to you really need to get out and spin those legs and get them moving before your next race. All right. And along with spinning the legs out, getting the junk out, you need to get fuel and fluids back in. You need to get your body refueled and rehydrated quickly post-race. You have about a 30-minute or so window to get food, fuel, fluid, what have you, all of that stuff back in so that your body can suck it in, put it into the muscles, and not eat up muscle tissue for fuel. So as soon as you are finished, in fact, in my case, as soon as I was finished, I pounded down a goo, actually, a hammer gel. Pulled it out of the pocket and sucked it down as I was on the way down the climb back to the starting line. All right, that's very important. I also finished the one bottle that I was carrying with me on the way down, and as soon as I returned to the car, I mowed down a peanut butter and jelly bagel and a couple more bottles of fluid, including a bit of Recoverite, another Hammer product that seems to work very well for me. So, you have spun your legs out, you've refueled, you've rehydrated. One more important thing to do before you hit the next stage of your stage race, forget about what just happened. Absolutely forget about it. Now, in my case, I had a terrible time trial placed in the bottom third of the GC. The best thing that I could have done was ignore that placing. Didn't matter where I placed, didn't matter how I placed. What matters that I finished and I was, completed that first stage. I knew it was going to be the hardest stage for me. Didn't go as I planned, but I really can't change it after the fact. So forget about your performance in the first part. The next race is always the next race. And that next race was indeed a crit. And we'll discuss that in just a moment. All right, Giro di Cello Stage 2 was a criterium race at the Sussex County Fairgrounds in Augusta, New Jersey. And it was actually the site of the Augusta Training Series, which we have tried to go to a number of times. And it seems every time that we get set up to get up there for the training series, it either is pouring rain or thunderstorms are rolling through or the race is canceled or what have you. So I was actually going in completely blind to what this crit was all about. And I have to confess, I had never raced a crit in the past. In fact, I have been relatively terrified of crit racing, only because the number of crashes and the number of people who do not know how to ride their goddamn bikes is so extremely high in crit racing, and especially in the lower categories. As you progress up the food chain towards, the front of the Cat 4 packs or the Cat 3 packs, people tend to know how to handle things a little bit better. The unfortunate thing is in this 4-5 group, pretty much anybody could come, take out a one-day license, and race the crit, and that kind of thing scares the hell out of me. Because on group rides, I've seen the way people handle bikes. It's not great, okay? There's a lot of people out there who are very, very strong, very, very powerful riders and very accomplished riders. However, they just have no technical skills and they just don't know how to ride their damn bike, to be perfectly honest with you. And I'm sorry if that's offensive to anybody out there, but, you know, it's as a side note, it's learning how to ride your bike, learning the skills necessary to compete in a very close quarters situation like a criterium is of the utmost importance. Utmost importance. So please make it a priority to learn how to ride and handle your bike, all right? That's my public service announcement. But anyway, getting back to the crit. The cello crit was, again, on the Augusta on the Sussex County Fairgrounds. The course was actually very, very flat, except for one sharp kick, and that was coming into the coming off of the backstretch towards the finish line. And I will walk you through here. After the as you rolled off the start finish line, there was a sharp left-hand bend, about a 100-degree bend left. That sort of cruised into a series of chicanes, left-right chicane, a couple of sweeping lefts to carry you down the backstretch of the fairgrounds. Another 90 to 100 degree left-hand turn into a relatively little steep kicker, and that took you towards the start-finish line. A maybe 40 degree right-hand bend put you right onto the finishing straight. It was worth noting there was a northerly, north-northwesterly wind that was blowing, and as soon as you hit that last left-hand bend and hit that little kicker, as you crested the top of that, you were hit full in the face with a 15-mile-an-hour wind, which was somewhat difficult to to work with, especially if you were off the front. So how did it work for me? Well, here's the deal. We got there shortly after the TT. And we were able to do a few scout laps with a couple of other people that we had met there and were competing in the crit alone. Those scout laps were not intended to be anything more than to understand what the race course was all about. They were not intended to be warm-up laps or anything of the sort. My race did not go off until about 1:20, and my wife's race went off about 11:30. So I had plenty of time in between to do a whole lot of nothing. In fact, I took my time up by taking photos, visiting the farmer's market, which was going on in the exact same place at the same time, and thinking about my warm-up and preparing to warm up. So about, give or take, 40-45 minutes prior to staging, I pulled out the trainer. The idea of warming up for a criterium. Criterium races are all about short, high-intensity bursts of power, zone 5, zone 6, zone 7 efforts, and then recovering at threshold. So those of you who listened to my VO2 Max and Zone 5 podcast last week, you guys are going to understand what I'm saying almost exactly. And if it sounds familiar, it is. It's exactly like my Zone 5 repeat workout that I have a lot of my athletes do, especially if they're criterium racers. All right. But the key to warming up for a crit like this is to get your legs spinning. And I don't mean tension-wise. I mean you want spinning, speed in your legs, low gears. Get the legs moving. Get your neuromuscular system primed. All right. After about 5 to 8 minutes of very easy spinning, trying to get your body temperature up, get your legs moving, and in this case, continue to get the junk out of your legs from the TT during the morning, you want to slowly move into zone 5. The protocol I used was a couple minutes in zone 2, a couple minutes in zone 3, 3 or 4 minutes in zone 4, and then about a minute in zone 5. All right. Once I had completed that minute in zone 5, I dropped myself back down to an easy spin, and then I hit a couple of 5 to 10 second very, very hard maximal gear accelerations to try and prep my body for that the inevitable kick out of corners or closing gaps that was about to happen. All right. Now, another thing to take to keep in mind, crit racing is very, very, very hard. It's very mentally taxing. Those moments when you hit that zone 5, 6, and 7 and you're killing yourself to close a gap, or you're killing yourself to stick with it out of a corner, is the time when your body's going to tell, your brain's going to start saying that I should give up. My body's really hurting. Do not listen to your brain. You need to shut your brain off. In fact, in terms of crit racing, this is what I'm going to tell you. Shut your brain off and go on instinct. Okay? Death or glory is something that that my team manager has said many, many times. In fact, I remember with his professional team, he told them, you go out there and you die trying, or I'm going to kill you when you get back to the team car. Very apropos advice, actually. Anyway, crit racing ideas, things that you need to keep in mind, things that are important to take note of. Stay at or near the front. All right, within the first 20 riders, that gives you the least accordion effect in the field. As accelerations and decelerations happen in the field, you will end up, if you're at the back, spending a lot of energy slowing down and then speeding back up, and then slowing down and then speeding back up, and slowing down, speeding back up, etc., 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 and so forth. So make sure you're staying at or near the front. If you have to move up, you can move up through the field or on the periphery of the field. Obviously, through the field is a little bit more perilous. However, you will continue to be in the draft almost all the time, and it will be a lot easier on your legs. So keep that in mind as well. Staying in the draft, very important thing, especially coming out of corners and when accelerations happen. If you do not stay in that draft, you will have a rough, rough race. You need to find a substantial wheel, and you need to follow that wheel. Because as soon as you pop out of the draft, you lose the effect of that draft, and you suddenly are ending up spending another 30% extra energy just to get back in there. All right? And staying in that draft requires a couple of things, and it requires you being attentive so that gaps do not open. It requires some significant cornering prowess so that you can hit those corners at speed without having to scrub a lot of speed and waste a lot of energy kicking up out of those corners. All right. So things to work on if you're looking to race crits would be fast cornering, fast and sharp cornering, cornering with groups or with people around you. And when you're in group rides or riding with friends, being very attentive as to the movements of those ahead of you so that you can anticipate and follow moves if necessary. All right. So the important thing here for you to remember is that gaps will kill you. Don't let them open up. And you need to work to close them. So you have to have that zone 5, zone 4, or that zone 5 repeat ability dialed in. As for how the crit actually went very well. Zone 5 repeat work is sort of my bread and butter. Really had been quite a bit throughout the winter because of the fitness building aspect of it. But my body was more than ready to handle those surges and lulls, and was very good at recovering from those surges and lulls. So that was absolutely not any kind of problem for me. In fact, looking at the crit itself, the crit was a very nice affair, 43 and a half minutes, about 17.75 miles, so 17 three quarter miles, average speed somewhere in the 24 and a half to 25 mile an hour range, which was about expected for this kind of crit. In fact, actually, I thought was probably a little bit slow comparatively. I would have expected actually a little bit more. But again, power number wise, average power of 260 watts, which would put it squarely into that zone 5 level. Normalized power of almost 300 watts, which again, would be about appropriate for a second effort of the day and for a longer effort as such. What it does tell me, probably need to look at functional threshold again, possibly retest it, and see where we stand there. And in any case, the criterium was very, very solid. I ended up finishing about mid-pack in that after USA Cycling officials kind of botched the bell lap, and we were not informed of the final lap. In fact, we thought we had two to go. We, in fact, were on the final lap. That became a sort of the story of the day when a lot of people complained to the USA Cycling officials. really the attitude that we got from those officials was disgusting, to put it mildly. They were more interested in playing What a Wonderful World from the PA system instead of announcing the bell lap. And the other problem was that they didn't even change the lap card. When we finished, it still said two to go. So, yeah, a little bit of boofing going on there. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, my legs felt good. I feel like I could have done more in that, especially had I known we had one to go. I would have actually tried to go for something. But such as it is, it happens. Can only ask for so much, and can't really dwell on the past. So that was the story of the crit. And of course, for those of you who are listening out there, remember your zone 5 repeats are the key to winning and doing well at crits. And you need to be able to keep yourself very attentive. All right, a lot of technical skill involved in it. So that's where you need to be working. The next thing to keep in mind would be recovery following that crit. And we're going to talk about that right after this little break. Okay, recovery from day one of the cello was nothing really special, actually. Get some carbs and some protein in, get rehydrated, throw on the compression gear, and you will be good to go. Really, the biggest part of it was to put the legs up, get all the crap drained out of them. Obviously, post-crit, you want to spin down and get the junk out of the legs and continue doing that with compression gear, et cetera, throughout the evening. Rehydrating and refueling are also really keys to succeeding in stage racing, and in most cases that's what you need to be doing, is getting out there and recovering well. All right, the after recovery, the third stage was a circuit race, 5.5 miles with not going to call it a significant climb for myself, since it's actually was actually a big ring climb for myself. There was a climb on the start finish area. Actually, there was one climb after the start. There was a right hand sharp right hand corner into a rolling downhill section, a right hand corner into a rolling gradual false flat backstretch, and then about 120 degree curve with a significantly sized drainage, like a drainage ditch or grate or whatever, what have you, a manhole cover type grate in the middle of it, into a climb and falls flat towards the start finish line. All right, the race course was pretty good. Road surface was pretty solid. Not much I can say about that. But basically for road racing, and especially the second day after you've competed previously, the key to having a good road race is to warm up properly. Now, it was extremely warm that Sunday morning, and humid. So my focus of my warm-up was on the trainer, and it would be to really get my body working in that hot weather, get it used to that hot weather, get it sweating, get it feeling good. All right. To that end, we were talking approximately 40 minutes or so on the trainer, and that 40 minutes really began with a lot of lower zone 2, zone 3 work. Longer duration stuff, probably about 15 minutes of that low duration stuff, just getting the body used to spinning and pedaling again in that warm weather. Again, ramping up into zone 5, which is what we would be hitting in that race, obviously. And again, a few hard sprint efforts to mimic, to match the race intensity and to mimic getting back into the field at some of the climbs, corners, things like that. So that's what your warm-up should consist of, especially in anything that's circuit race or crit race-like. In fact, in any race, you want to make sure you warm up to the level that you're going to be racing at. So if you're never going to hit Zone 7, then there's no point in using Zone 7 in your warm-up. If you plan on hitting Zone 7, you absolutely better hit it so you know what it feels like and your body's ready to do it. So, In any case, recapping the circuit race, now that we've done our warm-up, it's worth noting that prior to the race, I had, as I rolled past one of the USA Cycling officials, had commented, are we actually going to have a bell lap this time, since we didn't have one yesterday, you didn't change the lap cards, and that kind of screwed up the crit for a lot of us. Bear in mind that this USA Cycling representative had herself a megaphone in hand as she was saying this. She actually got very nasty, very upset, and essentially told me in no uncertain terms if I didn't like it, I could get my money back and not race. And I said, essentially, you know, hey, all I'm asking for is a bell lap, you know, a proper finish. And basically I got essentially screamed at and told that I'd be disqualified if I gave her any more lip. Really? It's not worth it. It's not worth getting worked up prior to start. So all I simply did was roll away and muttering the words, whatever, apparently did not really sit well with her. She went on a tangent, actually prior to the race, addressing everybody about how it was an open race and cars hate us and don't make them hate us and don't be stupid and, you know, she cares about us and all kinds of interesting discussion points. But I digress. The bottom line here was that the start of the race was kind of bollocksed up. We started about 20 minutes after our appointed time. We watched the 1-2-3 and women's 4 races come home. We watched almost the women's 1-2-3 race almost crash because there were not enough volunteers to keep traffic under control at the start-finish line. You're supposed to have the entire width of the road for the start-finish. However, there was nobody to direct traffic or halt traffic in the case of the finish. So the women 1-2-3 had to go from 2 lanes, narrow down into 1 lane to finish the race, all because of a gentleman from Florida in a pickup truck who decided it was the perfect time to drive through. And there were no volunteers to keep him out. So, that being said, let's get back to the race itself. The first lap of the race was a points prem for GC points. I do not understand why the hell you would have a points prem on the first lap. Maybe to ensure that people don't actually lollygag and the race actually gets moving. Not sure. However, the first lap was a points prem, and let me tell you, that first lap really, really hurts, especially after the day's racing prior and the fact that we had been standing there during staging while this woman from USA Cycling babbled about how cars hate us, etc., etc. So most of us were fairly cold by the time, fairly cold in terms of muscles being cold and not being warmed up, most of us were fairly cold by the time we rolled out. First lap was not too bad. Again, being very mindful to keep your head up, keep attentive, don't let gaps open. About halfway through the first lap, you kind of noticed that the field was getting very sketchy. Bear in mind, we're a field of about 70 riders or so. So it was interesting to say the least. With the hilliness of the, and I say hilliness in quotes, only because to someone like myself, this is not a terribly hilly route, but some of the more sprinter-oriented riders, this was a relatively hilly route. Those guys would kill it on the climbs and either soft pedal or stop pedaling as they crested the climb. There was no rolling over the top of the climb or anything like that. That allowed me to really make up a lot of placing on those climbs. So anytime I would drop back to drink or eat or anything else, I could easily make up 20 places by sneaking up the inside or outside of the field on any of the ascents, which was wonderful, actually. My legs felt very, very good. The only problem was, again, the race was very twitchy. Compared to the criterium the day before, the crit was great. It was very clean. It was a clean race. There was not a lot of bumping. There was not a lot of shoving. There was not a lot of jockeying for position. There was not a lot of feathering brakes or hitting the brakes even. In this case, it was a twitchy field. I don't know if people were tired or if the fact that they started cold was an issue. I'm not sure. But the field was very twitchy. There was a lot of, to take a phrase from Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin, there was a lot of argy-bargy. There was a lot of bumping. There was a lot of contact. And it was overall just a very twitchy, very sketchy race. Now, the third lap rolled around, and I believe people were starting to get a little bit gassed. And everything was going great. Around the first corner, we had a crash in the back of the field. I was sitting approximately halfway down the field. And crash at the back of the field. Someone hit their brakes in the first left-hand bend and slid out, took a couple of guys with him. And that split the field up a little bit, dropped a few riders off the back, maybe 10, 15 people ended up off the back from that point. However, coming into the back stretch, we were, again, very twitchy. People were actually starting to hit the brakes. People were trying moves off of the front, and those moves would get closed down very quickly, or they'd try to go off the front and just burn themselves out. Coming into the the third corner, that one with that large drainage grate, if you remember, most of the field slowed way down, and this was the recipe for most of the day on that corner. Slow way down, violate the yellow, the center line rule, and swing very wide, come up the outside of that drainage grate, and then punch it as soon as you hit that small climb up to the finish, the start-finish line, in order to get back up to speed. Lap number two and lap number three, I took the inside line, which was essentially unused. People had complained there was some gravel in that line. There really was no gravel. There was no sand in that line. It was a perfectly safe line, and it was a very good line to take to move up the field. And again, having relatively good climbing skills, I was able to move from 35th, 40th wheel all the way up to about 20th wheel. On that third lap, however, again, as people were getting tired and not rolling over the tops of the climbs, a couple of people stacked it up right in the front of the field. Now, I was told that the guy in front of the person who caused the crash actually hit his brakes for some reason or another and locked up his wheel. The guy behind him had nowhere to go, hit his wheel, went over. That started sort of a chain reaction, and now we're talking in the front of the field, okay? We're talking in maybe 9 or 10 riders back. He hit the deck. A couple of people in front of him hit the deck. People next to him went down. Crash involved maybe 4, 5, 6 people. And this, I go back to why people may be strong, but they just do not know how to handle their damn bike. The junior, who was racing essentially next to me at this time, had two choices. He had the choice to either bunny hop the bike in front of him that was on the ground or go around it. Junior attempted to do both. He tried to go around and bunny hop at the same time. That resulted in him falling, crashing into me, sending me off of the road. My front wheel dug into the soft sand on the shoulder, put me over the bars and into a patch of stinging nettles. Thank you very much. Again, if you're going to race, learn how to handle your bike first. For the love of God, that's how people get hurt. All right. Thankfully, I don't believe there were any significant injuries out of that crash. However, my day was done. My chain was off. My rear shifter, actually the right-hand shifter, was twisted up on the bars, and my shifting was a little bit tweaked. I don't know if it was a case of the wheel seated in the dropout improperly or something like that, but I got the bike up. I got the chain back on. I sort of twisted the shifter back in, and I soft-pedaled my way up to the finish line. Up to the start-finish line, I should say. And had to give the ignominious, done for the day, slid across the throat to the official at the line there. Injury-wise, nothing really significant. I landed on my right shoulder blade and some shoulder blade, neck, and upper back stiffness, some shoulder stiffness and soreness. Nothing significant, but definitely not very comfortable riding back to the start-finish line. And that was sort of that. Now, that being said, DNF, overall I finished, I believe, about 40th out of 70 on the GC, even without my points for that race, which is not terribly bad. When the actual final sprint came through for that field, for the 4-5 field, there was only maybe 15, maybe 18 to 20 riders at max contesting the finish. So it does give you an idea of how much that crash really disrupted the field. So it's a something to watch out for and something to keep in mind is anytime you have a crash in the field, positioning may or may not matter. It can happen anywhere. But best to stay cool and try to simply use your acquired skills to get around it. Don't put anybody else in danger by trying to do anything heroic or stupid. Power-wise, numbers were good. Normalized power for 2 3/4 laps, about 288 watts, averaging 222. So I was actually averaging under threshold for a significant amount of it. But again, it seems like a threshold test is definitely in order. Now, since I hit the deck, we're going to go over something that I haven't had to deal with very often yet, and that is crash recovery, and we'll do that and wrap it up right after this. All right, after crashing out of the third stage of the cello, after taking my bike down to the shop to have it checked out, make sure there was nothing damaged, nothing broken, everything was all right, time to recover from that crash, from hitting the deck. One of the best things you can do in that case is simply to get on the trainer and spin. Your easiest gear, no tension on the pedals. Leave your computer, leave your power tap, leave your Synchro, leave whatever at home. Don't even think about it. Just get on and spin and loosen up. If you do not, you will stiffen up mighty fast and you will really start to feel bad the next day. So getting on and loosening up a little bit post-crash is probably one of the best things that you can do. All right. Additionally, if you have any kind of bruises or hematomas or anything like that, if you have any road rash or things like that, care for that, obviously. Bruises, things like that, ice, rest, compress, elevate if you have to. care for your road rash and things like that. Tegaderm is a wonderful, wonderful thing. In fact, there may be a post coming soon on the the joys and the quality of Tegaderm, so that you can look for that as well, coming up very shortly. One of the other things you will consider after you've crashed and after you've loosened up on your trainer, you spun some easy gears, consider either sitting in a bath of Epsom salts or doing some heat and some stretching just to loosen those muscles up and keep them nice and loose. The less you do to them, the more they're going to tighten up, and the more your body is going to expect you are injured, the more it's going to tell you you are injured. All right? You do not want to feel injured like that. It's not a great thing. All right. So take care of yourself post-crash. It's a very important thing. All right. So there we go. 2 days, 3 stages, Giro di Cello, Northern New Jersey. Overall, it's a great race, and it's a great way to introduce somebody to stage racing if they've never done it. The biggest problem that I have with Cello was the organization. All right. The organization was... for a race that had been going on for about 10 years, the organization is, to be perfectly flat out honest, the organization's kind of abysmal. All right. I was very disappointed in the quality of the organization. it was told to me, actually wasn't told to me, but as I was watching the Women's Criterium, I was listening to a couple of the people from, I'm not sure if it was Skylands or Team Somerset or whatever, talking to each other, and they were saying that, they were missing upwards of 10 to 14 volunteers that just didn't bother to show up. They were saying that the first woman who took off for the time trial in the morning missed one of the turns on the course because the course marshal had not set up cones and was not there to direct them onto the upper part of the climb. And I'm not entirely sure how they resolved that, whether they changed her time or not. I never did hear that. But other issues, for a USA Cycling sanctioned race, getting an earful from a commissaire about the lack of, there's no PA system here was what I was told, even though she was standing there holding a bullhorn in her left hand as she was yelling at me. The lack of a PA system, as I was told. However, the PA system was being used to broadcast easy listening music during the crit. The poor quality of traffic direction during the circuit race, the lack of changing lap cards and calling out a bell lap during the crit, all of this stuff just really just smacks of Bush League kind of racing. All right, it's yeah, you only pay $70 to enter the stage race portion of this, but I would have expected a little bit more. The organization just was not really up to par, and honestly, to watch the women's 1-2-3 race almost stack up in a huge crash, almost a huge crash on the final straight. If you're going to tell the field that you have the entire road for the final sprint, you better stick to that. Not a single person from Skylands or Somerset. Not a single person from Skylands or Somerset had a walkie-talkie or radio with them. They were communicating by calling each other via cell phone, which is not nearly fast enough contact in this regard. For a race that's on open roads, if you're going to offer a whole wide open road for the last 500 meters, last 1,000 meters, you need to have people on radio ready to flag down vehicles in that oncoming lane and stop them when that race is coming through. You have to have that. That's not a negotiable thing. It has to be done. It wasn't done. And again, it almost resulted in an accident in the 1-2-3 field, and that was kind of unacceptable. That and the attitude of the USA Cycling officials whose really their job is to sit there and to, their job is essentially to sit there and to make sure the race goes off well, to hit the bell laps, to do X, Y, and Z. They didn't do that. All right. They were there to take times, and that was about it. And, that's kind of disheartening. But then again, that is USA Cycling, so I can't really complain much about it. It's well known that the organization doesn't do a whole lot to support local racing or anything else like that. They're not high on my list. So anyway, that being said, the overall, as an experience, the Cello is a great race. It's a beautiful race. The organization needs a little bit of work, but if you are looking to get into stage racing or you want to try stage racing, this is an excellent one to consider. Usually the last, second to last weekend in June, so keep it on your calendar for next year. And hopefully you learned a few things from my misfortunes and the things that I did not do well and the things I did do well. And you know, maybe that will help you out in your own racing and group riding endeavors. Again, thank you for listening. If you are listening on iTunes, please go ahead and rate this podcast. If you are listening on Stitcher, Blueberry, Podbean, if you're listening on the website, head on over to iTunes. Give me a couple minutes. Just rate the podcast. Rate the information you're getting. Again, it helps to show me that people are getting something out of this and that people are liking what they are hearing. All right, and until next time, I hope you all ride safe, ride happy, stay strong, and be well. I hope you keep the rubber side up and the soft side. I hope you keep the rubber side down and the soft side up. The other way's not a good thing. Keep the rubber side down, keep the soft side up. If the soft side hits the ground, I hope you recover well, and I hope you stay safe. All right, I will be talking to you very soon.